Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Michi Moo, how you going?
And we're up and rolling.
Oh, we're live, and we have a special guest today. Yes. And I consider this person one of my sisters from another mister. And I'll explain a little bit why later, but I love our beautiful Liz, who you're based in Sydney, aren't you, Liz?
Yeah, just Sydney. On, well, south of Sydney, about 2.5 hours at Culburra Beach.
There you go. So welcome, Liz. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. We wanted to share your story a little bit and get a bit of insight into the woman that is Liz, and you well, let's just start talking. But actually, before we start talking,
yeah, what's your song, Liz? What's your song?
You're an avid listener of Dorothy and the Dealer. You know that that's how we start.
I love Celine Dion because I sound exactly like her.
You sound exactly like her. So give me a song. Give me a song.
Oh no, don't make me do that.
No, but tell me a song. Tell me a song because then Mitch can sing it.
I can't. I don't know whether I can do Celine Dion's voice.
You know, Celine? We can't do any voices. But
what was the one from the Titanic? What was that song?
My Heart Will Go On. Near, far, wherever you are, I believe.
I really liked Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie.
Yeah.
Did you like Kate Winslet in that movie?
Yeah, Kate's good. Kate's good. You know, she's a pom. I like that. But I liked Leo. He was good in that.
What's your favourite Celine Dion song, Liz?
Right now, it's I'm Alive. I love that.
Is that the one that she did with the? Oh, maybe it's not. I like a few Celine Dion songs actually.
Yeah. She married a guy about 40 years older than her.
He's dead now.
He passed away.
Yes. Not really.
Awkward.
There you go. So Celine Dion, hey. There you go. Did you like our rendition?
I think that was amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh dear. Yeah. So we can see that you're in your beautiful house over there.
How's it going in that house, mate? I gave you some fucking
Mitch gives you so much hassle about the house.
It has its good and it has its not good. Well very done. Balanced in this house.
Well done, well done. I did say that. Today she said to me, oh, yeah, it'll be finished by such and such a date. And I'm like,
You've added like about seven, 8 months to it.
18 months later, no. Or every time you'd look at me, you'd be like, don't bring it up.
I don't want to talk to you.
Don't want to talk about it. Okay, so maybe Liz, just get started and share a little bit about how we met. Do you want to do that?
Sure. So yeah.
Or how you heard about us in the first, because that was a bit of an unusual way to meet us or hear about us. I think
it was. I actually met Ange, Mitch's wife, at a yoga retreat.
Just so people know, we also call her the Talkatron.
I developed a huge admiration for Ange that whole week. I was just actually in awe of her.
That was when she was pregnant with Ollie.
She was.
And she went over for a little retreat with somebody that they knew up in the hills here in Perth.
Yeah.
And you had heard about this woman as well. Online, did you?
It was really random. I had always said I never wanted to go to Bali. I never did yoga, never did meditation. And it was just at a time in my life where it came up on my Facebook and my marriage was hanging in by a thread is probably an exaggeration. To try and work on the marriage, we got rid of everything. So I'd sold a business, sold some units that we had, and just to try and have no distractions. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I didn't know how to sit still for, 10 years I'd been doing a lot of things, and that came up on my feed. And I just said to my husband, I think I need to do that. And he said, do it. And so I went to Bali on my own. I'd never gone anywhere overseas by myself, and that was to a place I was never going. And then there was Ange, and I loved that she had no filter.
That's a bit of a love and hate thing with Ange, I think, sometimes for people.
She just, she was so confident in her skin and so owned who she was. And I just watched her. I was just amazed. And then we just were talking, you know, what does your husband do? And she said, MJB. And then when I came home, I looked up what MJB seminar, she said, sorry. And so I came home and looked that up, and I was like, because I had it all sorted, you know. Do you want me to tell you another little twist in that?
Yeah.
So the yoga teacher on that retreat was actually Kerida.
That's correct.
She's an equilibrator.
Yeah.
And she was offering this special extra, which we didn't know what it was, and I was like, I'm not doing that because I got it all sorted, you know, like I don't need that. And so everyone else got it except I didn't get that, and I didn't know what it was.
Because your life was, like, you were schmick, right? Everything was like, okay.
I had it all under control.
You were a perfect definition of self-righteous and just being like, 100%. Like, I'm okay. I don't understand what you're talking about, that things aren't okay. Why would I need to do anything like that?
Exactly. Yeah, so then I came home and I looked up MJB seminars, and there was a Mastermind of Money in Melbourne in a couple of weeks. And I'm the kind of person that I have to get a feel for the person. Like, I can't just commit to something. I need to meet that person and see if I connect with them. So I was on the phone to it was actually my birthday, and my girlfriend was ringing me, and I said, I think I'm going to go down and do this seminar in Melbourne. And she said, oh, I'll come with you. So a couple of weeks later, we flew down to Melbourne, and halfway through the first day of Mastermind of Money, I had bought into everything. I was like, every single thing that you guys said, you were talking directly to me, and I was like, I need this. So I was in.
What I'm going to take away from that is that Ange didn't seminar you properly when you were in Bali, and we did the job when you came to us.
Oh, just another one of my referrals.
She'll literally sit anybody down anywhere and start telling them about MJB and relationships and you and stuff like that. She's our biggest advocate, isn't she? Which I think is the cutest thing.
She's also my fucking worst client.
That's why she always comes to me.
Biggest nightmare.
So, do you want to tell a little bit about your story, Liz?
So from when I was little?
Yeah, because, I mean, what had led up to you being so righteous and just so down the line that you didn't want to, you know, you felt like everything was okay and you didn't want to do anything, you know? Because it's funny, because can I just say something with that? Because I think people sometimes say that, and they're not wrong. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, there isn't anything wrong. There's nothing. But that's actually not how you see it. And then when we look further and when we dive deeper, there's always something going on. There's always that side of us that's being right, or that side of us that's presenting to the world as everything's okay, is hiding a shit ton of I'm not okay and stuff happened and I don't know what to do with it. So I'm best off just presenting to the world that everything's okay. And that was you, right?
Well, I think I also think that's part of what happens in the conscious mind. The conscious mind is trying to meet the narrative of what it displays to everybody else in its surroundings. Mm. And it's, you know, we think that the conscious mind has some sort of level of control over what's going on in their surroundings. But at a deep level, that's not the reality. If you know, it's what happens at a subconscious level back in our past that is actually in charge of what's going on. That's why we'd be breaking up from someone that we love. That's why we think the only way out of this is to get out, not realizing that when you get out, you're just going to get back into it again, just with someone else. And, you know, part of your destiny is you're here to work those things out. You're here to find love in the places you think it's not at.
Yeah, so tell us, Liz.
So when I was six, my mum passed away, and mum was in hospital for quite a while. She had leukemia. So in those days, you went into hospital and you're basically in isolation. So I can remember as little, I had a little sister who was 4 years younger than me. So, you know, I was about five and we could go to the hospital and stand out in the grounds and she'd sit up at the window and we'd wave to her. And that was as much contact as we could have. Because we were obviously, you know, kids carry germs in those days. That's what they did. So Dad could go in, but we weren't allowed to go in. So that was, and then Mum was, and so my grandparents had, which was Mum's mum and Dad, they actually moved in with us and looked after us, like with Dad as well, and looked after us. And then Mum passed away. I was six, and then Dad remarried pretty quickly. And Nan and grandfather obviously moved out. They didn't approve of the stepmother because of how she was she'd left her three children, and so she was very abusive to us. Like we were physically and mentally abused for 6 years.
That was the stepmother, your stepmother.
That was the stepmother. Yeah. So, yeah, I used to say that. And I was basically her slave. I used to do all the housework. Like all the housework from age, say, seven. She pretty much moved in not long after Mum passed away. And then I didn't know that, but she actually legally adopted me. So on my birth certificate, she's still my mother. But she didn't adopt my sister, she just adopted me. So and we used to go to my grandparents every single school holiday. So I had two aunties. My mum was an identical twin and another sister. So there were every single school holidays, we would go to, lived at Coffs Harbour, which is, I don't know if people know New South Wales, but it's south, north coast, and they were all in Sydney. And one of them would always pay for our flights and every single holidays we spent with them for all those years. And then when we were 12 and Dad and her were going to split up, we were down at my grandparents' for holidays and I said, and she wanted to take me, but she didn't want to take my sister. And I said to Nan, I'm not talking to her because I don't want to go with her. And so thankfully I felt safe with Nan and grandfather. Mm. So we lived with them then for a couple of years while Dad sorted himself out and then went back to live with Dad when I was 14. And he had another lady then that he eventually married. And she didn't physically abuse us, but she made it very clear that we weren't wanted. So I moved out of home as soon as I was driving, so like 17, I think I was, I moved out of home.
Right.
And then I joined the Air Force and then married at 20 to a man who, surprise, surprise, abused me.
Right. So you went from a couple of perceived step monsters.
Yeah.
Into another perceived abuseful situation.
What happened?
Correct. Yeah, so I had, we had a beautiful son and I left him when our son was about 15 months old.
How did you get out?
Very cleverly. I was in the Air Force and that was my day job, but I used to also sell Tupperware, believe it or not. And I killed it. Like I only did it for, it must have been about 9 months, and I came 11th in Australia year.
Good job.
Yeah. So, what I used to do was go and do a Tupperware party. And my grandmother used to mind. So by this time I was in the Air Force and I was back in Sydney and my grandparents were still there. And so Nan used to mind Cameron Monday to Thursdays. So I'd drop him off there and go to work and then pick him up. And so what I used to do was at night I'd go into a Tupperware party and I'd come home and say it wasn't a very good party or whatever. And then the money I used to send in the nappy bag to Nan, who would go down and bank it for me.
Right.
I never had any money. I never had anything. And so that was the only way. So in my mind, I wasn't doing it to leave him, but I was doing it because that was the only way I could save, was to not let him know we had any money. And so that came in handy, though, when I eventually did leave. And I was very lucky that I had the Air Force. So I just went and saw some high-ranking people and said that I wanted to leave, and they put me in emergency accommodation on the base. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was very lucky I had that.
Just before you go on, actually, with your story, it's interesting because, I mean, one of the things, you know, that we're inspired about is sharing the basic principles of growing your wealth with people, right?
Yeah.
And because when we feel disempowered in that regard, we feel disempowered in our personal selves. You know, when we're feeling disempowered in terms of our wealth, our net worth, we're disempowered in terms of our self-worth. And one of the biggest things that I find is the amount of women who feel and who have handed over their responsibility and their power to handle their finances. Mm-hmm. And as much as this is a broad generalization, a lot of the people that I've personally come into contact with that have had or have – a lot of the people that I've personally come into contact with that have had issues leaving their partners – is because of the fact that their partners controlled all of the finances and they didn't feel that they had the power to be able to do that for themselves, and therefore they didn't feel that they had the power to leave. So they were disempowered in that regard. So there's a lot to be said for you being in whatever way and knowing to be able to take that back, because taking back, not having that would you agree, would have kept you there a lot longer. Not feeling that at whatever point you realised that it was time to leave, in not being empowered in terms of your finances would have kept you there longer if you felt dependent on somebody for your finances, right?
Absolutely, especially when you've got children, because you just think, I've got to feed my children.
Yeah.
You know.
So that was good. Like that, I take my hat off to you for sorting that out and to like being aware enough to be able to put some money away and to save for yourself. That was good. So then what happened?
That was basically, I mean, there were times that I had taken on a lot of guilt because I had wrecked the family because I left. So right. and he made sure of that, but you know, he was on his best behavior. We're friends to this day. He was on his best behavior. He was trying to get me back, but I got put into the housing. I said, I don't want to go into a house because I was scared that he would come and, well, he used to say that he would take Cameron and kill me. And so I said that I wanted to go into somewhere where there was people around. So I went into a unit, which was great. I felt quite safe there because if ever he turned up, there was always people around. So
right. And then there were also people who were in the Air Force.
Absolutely. Everyone there. So I was really fortunate.
You know, this stuff goes on all the time. Like, I know, I really don't let any males manage or master my money. You know, I hand it over to females because females just handle it so differently, you know. And I don't think anybody really consciously wants to behave like that. I think it happens at a subconscious level because he's got his own shit going on. You know, his own insecurities. I don't want her to leave me. I don't want her to get out. I want to feel like I'm the man who's providing and giving you everything you need, and you need me, and that gives me a sense of security in who I am. It's crazy. I was literally just with someone the other day who was telling me they were at a house, and he said it was cringeworthy. Every time I finished a beer, the guy would go, hey, John, he's finished his beer. Can you go get him a beer?
Really?
Yeah. And this went on all night to the point where he was like, fuck, I had to leave. I felt so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then, like, can you go make us some biscuits? Can you, like, go?
Well, she was basically there just to serve and provide the beer.
Because I don't think, like, I know the guy and he's a really nice guy, but I don't think if he understood the fucking damage he was doing, he just wouldn't do that, you know? I don't think it happens, you know, consciously. You know, there's a certain level of, well, obviously.
No. Well, no, the subconscious, like we've talked about before, yeah. Subconscious is what's running us. So, Liz, what got you to a state that you were obviously, because you said at the beginning that you were, your marriage was hanging by a thread.
So this is my sex. So I remarried.
Yeah.
So I divorced Chris, and that ended. That was that. but I did say to him, you know, we've got a child together and we're going to have a relationship for the next 20 odd years. We might as well make it pleasant. And apart from, he's been married 3 times now, apart from his second wife, it's been very, you know, amicable. So that was good. And then I met my current husband a few years later, and that was the one that, you know, I've been married 24 years now to him, but that was the one that was coming to an end.
So what had gone on then? What had happened in the relationship to get it to that point? Because obviously with your story and with what happened to you as a kid, somehow or another that would have impacted how you felt about yourself. And tell me what went down, you know, over the course of time there.
So exactly that. I was so busy doing that I didn't feel, I guess, and I lost myself. So I think I felt that I had to achieve, and I was always achieving, but I always felt that the rug was going to get pulled out from under me, that I always had to have a plan B. And so I found that I was surviving rather than living, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I went away and I had with work, and I had 3 weeks of the best fun ever, and I became really badly attracted to another man.
Right.
So that's what happened. Shit. My husband actually saw that, and he was the one that called me on it, because it was an all-consuming, like, I thought I was in love with
him. Infatuation.
Yeah. So
where you can only see the positives and there were no negatives.
100%. And he actually said to me, I think you've got feelings for someone else and you're not being honest with me or yourself. And I said, okay, you're right.
Mm. Right.
And that's what happened.
So it's like, sounds to me like in having the situation with your mum leave and then the situation with your first husband, that you kind of tarred the second one with the same brush, didn't know when the rug was going to be pulled on out from under you, so you didn't really give him a chance.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. So you've got to this point where you need to do something about it. Is that right?
Correct.
Is that where you decided to go on the retreat?
That was when, so in my mind, we were done. Like, right. I was like, I've got a family. I've got to know that if I leave, it's because I'm just not in love with you and I don't see a future with you, rather than for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I was like, all right, we give it a go. And so all the distractions, because I had a business, as I said, we had units that we ran as service apartments. I had a full-time job and we had the family. Everything, I sold everything off except kept the job and the family and just worked, just focused on, well, actually I focused on me. And that's when I came to that, because it was in the process of I sold the business and then that came up on my feed. And then I met Ange, and that was in the first year, basically.
Right. So well, I like the fact that you looked at that and realised that you had to work on yourself and you had to work on what was going on for you, and that you decided not to leave because of somebody else, that you decided to leave because it was on you.
It's actually something that my husband said to me. He said, you're going to spend the rest of your life. He said to me, he said, you need to do whatever you need to do to see that we're good. He said, you're going to spend the rest of your life trying to get back what you already had.
Mm.
Ooh.
That's really good.
That's a good statement.
Husband.
It's a good statement. Because, I mean, there's a part of us knows we're running away for the wrong reasons.
Or you're running away from something.
Yeah.
Or towards something rather than realizing that you've got everything you need.
That you've got everything you need because nothing's missing.
Mm.
You know, it's always miscommunication, right? I haven't been able to communicate to myself or to you what I need and what I feel is absent, you know?
Yeah.
So so what happened then when you – obviously you said that once you did – you're at Mastermind of Money, you realized that, yep, you were in and you just need – you realized that you're in the right place.
Yeah.
And the part of you that kind of didn't want to look at anything was like, oh, I know I need to look at stuff now, right?
Yeah.
So what happened then?
So then I did Relationships and You and holy cow. That's all I can say. Yeah. The funny thing was, Gerrida did my celebration.
Wow. No mistakes.
Oh, amazing. There is no mistakes. And I'm so glad that I didn't get it when I was in Bali and I did it there because it was like, look, I've got no words. It was the most, do you know what I thought after it? It was the most freeing thing, if that makes sense. It's like I thought to myself, people go through life and don't know what this feels like. Like this needs to, everybody needs to do this because you don't even realize the burden that you're carrying until you're not carrying it.
Because you were like, again, you were one of those people that was so adamant that everything was fine and that, you know, you'd sorted it all out. You worked on your mum, did you?
Yeah.
In the
end? Oh, no, dad.
You
no,
worked dad. On dad, right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And you got, you just got clear.
Mm.
And my father had passed away by that stage. So it was not, so it was not that I didn't get to know my dad until he would had gone, you know. So I didn't get the opportunity then to have that relationship with him that that I'd held back from all those years because I had all this resentment.
So then what was the outcome of that, Liz? Outcome of that, like relationships and you having that experience?
I thought I need to be an accelerator. I wanted to do that. I was like, I just went all the way, did Letting It Go, STP, got my mission, my purpose, and my marriage is, you know, stronger than ever, you know, and our families together. I've watched the kids grow up and it helps you be a better parent because I always think that my eldest, he got the controlling mother who didn't, you know, it was my way, you know, no, this is what you need because I thought I knew better. Whereas with the younger ones, they, you know, they didn't get that controlling mother because I could stand back and let them live their life in accordance with their values and not my values. So,
So what? So, in terms of the shift in you, what do you think it was that shifted, Liz? What do you think was the biggest difference from pre doing that work to after doing that work? Because I think it's important because I think so many people and just while you're thinking there, a lot of people think that, you know, they hear us talking about what we do, for example, and they think you have to have some massive traumatic stuff happen or life that you look at needs to be really terrible or something, you know. But your life was okay. It was going along. I mean, there was things that weren't going right, but it was like – you don't sometimes relate that back to how it was when you were a kid. You don't sometimes relate back to the fact that these things happen to you and therefore you've got these pre-programmed kind of understanding of what love is. You know, my mum loved me but she left, you know, or, you know, my dad loved me but he brought this woman into the house that, you know, didn't treat me well. You know, those sorts of things going on inside, and it's like there's a little kid who's had all of those experiences running the show where the adult is putting on the facade that everything's okay, which is a big part of what you did, but inside there's a little kid kind of running the show that's feeling, you know, something's not right. Like, I've got everything. I've got the family. I've got the, you know, I've got the husband. I've got this or whatever, but something's not right. And then we look outside of us to see if we can get some sort of feedback to see, right, this guy over here, is that going to give me something is going to make, is that going to help me to feel, is that going to help me to be something different, something outside of this, you know?
Yeah, so I think the biggest shift in that moment was for me was that everything I needed I had within myself, and that I was worthy, and I didn't need that external, tick in the box. I just need to look within myself.
So did you feel you were meant to get something from your dad? He was meant to give you something. He was meant to not have you in that situation, or he was meant to...
He had let me down.
Right.
Yeah. He didn't protect me. He didn't do this. He didn't... It was everything he didn't do that I was resentful for, and that he didn't... You know, he always took the wife's side. He never put the kids first, all of that sort of stuff, yeah.
Because it's funny that, you know...
Again. So that's what you perceived.
Correct.
And then when you got it, how did that change?
I wouldn't have wanted it any other way, because I got I'm strong. All the things that I've done, it got me out of a bad marriage. All the things that I perceived that I hadn't gotten, I survived. I survived abuse in a relationship. I was a little kid who learned to be like, I'm very aware of everything around, because I used to, you'd walk into the house and it'd be like you're walking on eggshells and you'd be seeing. So all of the skills I got from that have helped me in my life. And, now I'm about to open my fourth shop in my new business, and it's, and I'm not, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and I'm like, you know what? I just know where I'm going, and you just stay on track and don't let anything going on around you, make you go off track.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, I think that it's funny, 'cause, I mean, I know for you as well, we talk about this often. We can talk about this with people, like, and have these conversations where we say, like, this is what you got and this is what you realized. But that is such not an intellectual realization, right? Because there would have been times before you think that you're worthy, or you think that you've got everything, and that you try and convince yourself of that. But there's something very, very different when you have an experience of that. Wouldn't you agree, Liz? It's like
100%.
That experience is something that you just like, whoa, like I knew it, but I never knew it, because now instead of it being here in my head, it's here in my heart, and nobody can undo and take away that understanding, that experience, that love, that gratitude. It's like learning to ride a bike. You can't undo that. You just, it's now ingrained in you, this new appreciation for everything that was already there instead of everything that was, outside of you. And just like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, she realized she had everything, the power she needed was there all along. It's just like the alchemist. You read The Alchemist, and the answer in The Alchemist is everything was in his backyard. It was there all along. And it's the same thing. It's that message is given and fed back to us constantly, but it's until you have that experience of it, it just means nothing.
Well, a lot of the time I think people are lying to themselves, right?
Yeah.
And what happens is that when you lie to yourself, you attract other people around you that also lie to themselves.
Yeah.
So everybody's pretending that everything is okay.
Yeah.
When deep down it is, but you haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. It is okay deep down there, but because you haven't seen that, you're living as if it's not.
Yeah, so, and therefore you have to pretend as if you're the one that's got it and everybody else is fucked.
Liz never did that.
and no, I'm on top of it. I've got this, And all it is that, it's just that part of the brain that's trying to protect you, until such a time that you're ready to see, and it's funny because it's a life cycle. You'll see this in all the movies through Hollywood. It's the hero's journey. You go, you have this shitty, you have this shitty experience. You go from where you are to having this shitty experience until dropping down into your worst nightmare. I'm going to lose my marriage. And then suddenly, the sage appears in whatever form or forms. And then suddenly that uplifts you. And then you have your epiphany. And now you're administering wisdom onto other people to do the same thing. And I think that's part of the hero's journey. But everybody plays a role in that, Every human being plays a role in it. And I think the fortunate thing is that, when people are doing this and everybody's amongst each other, one person always gets it, and then realizes, holy shit, and then has a laugh at the cosmic joke of, I was getting around the world pretending that I got that I was loved and everything else, but deep down inside I felt abandoned and rejected and neglected, and like fucking mother wasn't there and father wasn't there and he was meant to be there and blah, 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 blah. And then when you stop and get it, you realize that they were there, and the way in which they were there gave you over and above what you expect, which has saved your ass all the way through your life. Mm-hmm. So you suddenly realize, holy shit, if my father hadn't have done this in this way, I would never have got out of that fucking relationship. I would never have four businesses. I'd never be able to fight for my marriage. I'd never be able to be there for my kids. You know, I probably would have moved on again, and they would have felt abandoned. And that. Mm. So it's funny how, you know, this is what awaits people is the revelation of a perfect order to things, you know. But unfortunately, because of the brain, it, we're able to avoid that order. And when you feel it for yourself, you just want everybody to know, guys, listen, what's happening is absolutely meant to be happening. It's perfect.
And I think that as well, that the cycles show us that we're not clear with something, but many people avoid it.
Yeah.
And like they avoid it by going, well, if I just find another partner, if I go to a new job, if I change this or do that. And one of the things that you and obviously your husband in this case were able to work through was that actually this is a representation that something else is not okay, so I need to go and do something about
it. He sounds like your present husband sounds like a bit of a Jedi, mate. Like he
if you could see him, he's a bloke. There, right. It's like if you wanted to, he's just a bloke. Like he hasn't done any of this work because it's all, I'm good.
Yeah.
Sounds like someone we know.
We'll get there, honey.
So Liz, I know that after that experience, you were very taken with the possibility of being able to work with someone. And, you know, an equilibration is a beautiful thing. It's where you help another person, obviously. For me personally, it's one of the greatest things I get to do in my life. I get to sit down with someone and I just facilitate their opportunity to see both sides of anything that's happened. I facilitate a moment of pure love and gratitude and understanding of everything that's happened for them, you know. And so when you have that experience and when you experience it in a deep and profound way, oftentimes, unlike what's happened with you, you were very called to learn how to do it and to help other people do it, right?
Absolutely. And just as you said, it's holding that space. We don't, you know, they do it. We just give them the space and guide them and hold their hands and be there with them while they, you know, reach that and see that, yeah, there was nothing missing.
Yeah, and to me, I really love that you've got, because next minute you're in Bali again with us, right? Because you're learning how to do the process there, and it's a process, you know. It's a very precious opportunity to be able to work with someone. So, you know, learning how to do it is a precious thing, you know. So you just took the bull by the horns, and you just went, "I just want to know everything. I just want to do it." How has that been for you to be able to sit on the other side of that and facilitate that moment for other people?
Oh, it's an absolute honour. You know, it's actually the most heart-opening experience for us as well. So I love it. I'm honoured to be a part of it.
Do you remember the first person you ever worked with?
I do actually, yes.
And did you panic working with them?
Of course. Yeah.
Oh my God, I think I fucked that up. No, you didn't.
Because I was all about, I can't get this wrong, you know. But then when you're in there, you realize it's absolutely nothing to do with us. It's all about that person, and we've just got to guide them. Yeah.
Do you know, that's the one thing I love the most about our equilibrators is everybody's like unfailing dedication to doing the very, very best that they can possibly do to help another person get to see what they got to see, you know. And I take my hat off to you, Liz, that you got to a point where you were able to do that for another person, because I know it's a vulnerable position to be in, right, when you sit there to try and help other people. Because coming from, and I remember when we were in Bali and we were having this conversation, and there was a part of you that was still a bit reticent, like hesitant to let go. And in order to help another person, you've got to be able to go to that place yourself, you know. And I think that you were still a little bit caught up in being right instead of being open to whatever's going to happen here is actually meant to happen. And you getting that as well was a big moment, I think, when you realised that, holy shit, I've actually got this. I get what I have to do now to hold that space for another human being, you know. And I know that that was a really, really big leap for you. And I think that I think you do an amazing job. I think it's awesome. So thanks. In terms of your businesses now, so you've got four businesses. You're a busy little bee, aren't you?
I am a busy little bee. So we've just about to open our fourth shop probably in about 3 weeks.
What do you do? You've got.
So it's called White Earth. It's just all natural products, basically.
Candles.
Candles, body product. It's like it's all about self-love. Funny about that.
Wow.
And taking the time for yourselves, and you know, so it's got bath, body, beauty. That's what I say. Yeah, just about connecting with yourself. And I say, so you know, I just had a training day with all the girls yesterday, and I said, look, because we'd gotten a bit bigger, I thought it was good that we all connected just as a group. And I said to them where it came from, where White Earth came from. And it was kind of, so White was my maiden name, and it's kind of, oh. Dad was, yeah, so that was, I didn't get, Dad was the only son with three sisters, and then he had two girls, so White ended with him. And as I've just shared my relationship with Dad, whilst he was alive, was, you know, I felt that he'd let me down, basically. And so when I realized that he didn't, that he gave me so many gifts, this was kind of homage to Dad, which is where the whites come into it. And then Earth, obviously, because we offer things from the earth, it's got to be all natural. And so I had to share that with the girls, and then just said, look, our purpose is to create a space where people connect their mind, body and spirit and breathe, and that's what we're all about. So when people come in, they just might come in and just breathe. It's like, you know, and I find it's a space that they just come in and they just offload, and I love that. You know, every day I get to do that.
That's cool.
That's so cool. I really love that. Great
job. So where's your next shop opening?
Another one in Huskisson. We're just opened in Kiama. So all on the south coast at the moment.
Right.
And then
are they close to each other?
They're different. So the ones in, I've got three in Huskisson that are all different. I've got two, one's White Earth, which is our baby. We're just moving that up and going quite large. And then I've got the Slow Tempo, which is because I had to keep this one because I now started manufacturing as well.
Yeah.
And so the original shop has that space for that. So that's just basically going to be a Slow Tempo. So it's got candles and teas and things like that. And then the third one in Husky is all, it's gifts with purpose. So it's all like beautiful journals, and we've got natural clothing and things like that. And then we opened in Kiama, which is up, it's about an hour from Husky, it's about an hour and a bit, about an hour and a half. And that's, well, our bath, body, beauty. So,
wow. Yeah. That's cool. So, Liz, before we finish up, in terms of your whole journey, in summary, in gratitude, what do you think would be the biggest thing that you're grateful for, and what is, or the biggest thing you've learned in terms of your whole journey so far?
Oh, that. The biggest thing I'm grateful for, wow, gosh, so much, so, so much. I'm grateful that I realized how much I was loved, and that nothing was missing, and that I got to meet you guys. And become a part of your tribe, and now I get to do that and hold that space for others. I think that's probably in the whole journey the most that I'm grateful for.
That's good. Cool. I love that. Liz, you are a superstar. Thank you so much for chatting with us today. It's great to hear. I think it's really helpful for people to hear different people's stories, and I know for you, like, it was a big thing for you to, you know, just emotionally just look at yourself. You know, and that's a big challenge for people. But then also you said something a little while just before about being on purpose, and no matter what's going on in the outside world, that you're able to do what you do with purpose and with intention, and that makes all the difference, because it doesn't matter what's happening on the outside, because now you're no longer fulfilled by the outside, you're fulfilled internally. And when you can do that, whatever's going on the outside is just stuff. It's happening, and It's there, but we can tell even by listening to you how purpose-driven you are and how intentional you are with what you do. So we appreciate you, Liz, and I can't wait to be able to hang out with you.
It's been too long, buddy.
It feels like forever because we can't travel, but soon we'll be running seminars on that side of the country again, and we'll see you soon.
Liz, I just wanted to say one thing before we go. One of the things that you said that was important through this particular podcast was, and I know we mentioned earlier, but everything is actually okay.
Mm.
Everything for everybody, it is actually okay. You just have to look and have the courage to actually bridge that gap between your head and your heart. But in your heart, everything is okay. You just got to ask yourself, who's running the show? Is your heart running the show or is your head running the show? And I think that you were wise enough to tune into that and realize, hey, you know what? My head's running the show and I need to get my heart to run the show. And I think that that's a commendable thing for anybody to do.
Good on you for looking, Liz, and good on you for being here. Thank you so much.
See ya, buddy.
We love you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.